Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Devon Insight Speaker Seminar for October. I'm your host, Graham Flynn, Chief Executive of Devon Insight. Today's event is called Globe Trotting with George Jones, A Blind Man Adventures Around the World. Despite being severely visually impaired, George set himself the challenge of visiting 30 countries before his 30th birthday. Our guest speaker is George Jones. Good morning, George.
Good morning.
And you're joined here today by your mum. That's Caroline. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning.
Now, we've already been chatting for half an hour, so I know there's lots of exciting stuff to talk about. But let's wind the clock right back. I suppose we should start with a little history about you, George. Are you Devon born and bred?
I was born in Somerset, like Exmoor, so on the edge border of Somerset and Devon.
Yeah.
And then I've lived in Devon for about 6 years now.
Cool.
In a little village called Chillington near Kingsbridge.
I see. Now, tell me about your school life. What was school like for you?
It was a little bit hard to start off with. Then when I started, it would have been sort of year 9, 10 sort of age. Mm-hmm. I got help. We got a plan in place and I got learning support, and I got a little bit extra time on my exams, and I also got an extra study session twice a week.
Excellent.
Which led me to being able to get my grades that I needed.
And where did that lead you? What was your profession?
That led me to doing hospitality and catering at sixth form.
Yeah.
And then also, and it allowed me to become a trained chef for a while, mm-hmm. for a couple of years until my eyesight got too bad. So then I had to restart education. Mm-hmm. So I went to the RNC College for the Blind, and I got my braille, got my maths and English up together, and I got my ICT level 3 and my business studies, and then I went to university for a year where I done tourism and travel and hospitality management.
So let's go back to your chefing career. What sort of restaurants were you working in?
Well, what it was is I started in a local pub in a little village we lived in. And then I started in, when we moved to a village called Exford, I started at the pub opposite me, just as a KP, and then I started doing breakfast chef, and then doing starters and salads in the evenings. Then I went to a small place called Andrews on the Weir, in Portlock Weir, where I was a trainee chef, like doing crab, learning how to do seafood and like filleting fish, things like that. And then as my eyesight got worse, I just moved a few jobs doing KP and concentrating on little starter dishes. Mm-hmm. And then as my eyesight got worse, I got to a stage where I didn't feel safe doing it. I thought it's not safe for other people around me. And that's when I went back to college.
Let's talk a little bit about your sight loss journey. I've got in my notes here that you've got bilateral optic atrophy.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Basically, optic atrophy means is the optic nerve, it doesn't work properly. So the nerves from your eyes to your brain are very, very slow. So the best way I can explain it, somebody could wave their hand in your face, but you wouldn't see their hand on your right-hand side until their hand was on your left-hand side.
So there's a sort of delay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the optic nerve is dying slowly, and that is what's causing my eyesight deterioration. And then with that, I also get colour deficiency. So the easiest way of explaining it is I can tell the difference between a red and a green pepper when they're 10 metres apart. Put next to each other, they look the same.
That's not good for being a chef, is it?
No.
How about sharp knives?
I was fine with sharp knives because I learned how to cut. Use it as a sharp knife, so you always have the knife edge against your knuckle.
Yeah.
So you're not, it's just rubbing against your hand, not sharp. But then, as of my eyesight deteriorated. I didn't feel safe within myself doing it.
And what about hot pans and ovens and all that sort of thing? That must have been quite scary.
Yeah, it was quite, especially when like you lift up a pan of water, for example, and you can't see, because it's a clear water in a pan, you can't see the level of the water within the pan, so it could be too full and then you'll split on the floor or even worse, on yourself.
God. Again, I've got in my notes here that you've got about 6 to 8% of your eyesight remaining.
Yeah.
What challenges does that give you in everyday life?
Just walking from, say, from the shop or from the house to the shop, if somebody's left a wheelie bin in the way, I don't always see it, because obviously I walk down the same pavement day in, day out, and if somebody's put something on the pavement, I'll walk into it. If I put something in the wrong place at home, it takes me ages to find it again, because I'll be like, oh, where do I put my cup of tea down, or where do I put my coffee down? And then sometimes Mum will come home and, oh, what did you do with the post this morning? Well, I can't see where I put it, and I can't remember where I put it.
Oh, dear.
And just like day-to-day things, it's just, you don't really, you might do something, and then you just don't see what you've done, sort of thing.
How old were you when you first became aware that there was an issue with your sight?
14.
14. Mum, this must have been quite challenging for you.
Yeah, the it was picked up at junior school, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That your eyesight wasn't very good, but it took them a while to go. We went to Exeter and they did all the tests.
Mm.
And then you were about 15 then, weren't you? And they said, oh, you'd never get a driving licence, which I think was probably one of the worst things out, wasn't it? Living in the middle of Exmoor when everyone was riding around on scramble bikes and quad bikes at Renfield and you couldn't do it. And knowing that you wouldn't be able to get a driving licence, I think that was a real challenge for you.
Conversely, we find that with a lot of our clients who've acquired sight loss in later life, that that's one of the most difficult things for people to give up, their driving licence. And I know a lot of the men in particular really struggle with that. They see that as almost challenging their masculinity, suppose.
Yeah.
So that that's really challenging.
And I think one of the hardest bits for me growing up was when I was sort of, say, 18, like my brothers. So my, one of my brothers, when he was 16, got his tractor licence and like got his started saving up for his driving licence, and I was like, I wish I could do that, but I couldn't, sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Where did you get good support from? Was there any organisation or people that supported you in those early days?
In the early days, we... What was it called? From Somerset Council, wasn't it?
Sensory Team?
Oh, yeah, Sensory Team. That was it, yeah.
Yeah.
And they helped, and...
South Moulton College was very good. They put all the things in place for you very quickly.
Mm.
Really good. So that was Devon Sensory Team, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And you've got a long cane?
Yeah.
When did you learn to use that?
I learned to use that when I went to the College for the Blind, the RNC.
Yeah.
Because my eyesight was only just getting bad enough for a cane. And... once again, it was sort of like stubbornness, big-headedness. I probably should have started using a cane before, but stubbornness, being big-headed, I didn't. And then, but now, I've used it all the time, and I sort of lost without it, if you know what I mean.
I think adapting
is
really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
And part of the adapting process is actually acknowledging that you can't do what you used to be able to do.
I think the cane, I said, it would be a really good idea if you used that, because you were walking into people because you couldn't see them walking towards you until it was too late, and you'd get in the way of people, which, okay, you know. And also to cross the road, it just makes people aware, you know, that you can't see the car as far away as other people. You can't see people walking towards you, and you might bash into somebody. So just says you need to start using it. You're not safe.
Now, George, you're a tall man.
Yeah.
You're a broad man as well. Yeah. So that must have created some problems when you're bumping into people. In
the street. You think it's a small knock, but you see somebody go in.
Okay, so what was really... was there anybody who was really helpful to you? Or a really good experience you had in those early days?
I had a lady come and help me when I was at South Moulton from the Devon Sensory Team.
Yeah.
And she's brilliant. She came in. She came in, I think at the time it was once a week, and she came in to see how I was getting on with my laptop there, adjusted for me.
Yeah.
See how I'm just making sure it's all on point. And then, like, just when they're sorting out my GCSE exams, she came in and made sure that everything, like the exam papers, everything was perfect.
So you've raised a good point there, which is about computers,
yeah,
laptops and things, because... again, one of the issues we have is that there's a lot of older clients of ours who've never used computers. You being a bit younger, you've used them in your education.
Yeah.
I assume you use computers in your research for your travels.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's
good.
Okay. What could have been done better for you as a young person in those early days?
Probably one would have been... the transport,
yeah,
like getting places and making things more accessible. So, mm-hmm. like, one thing could be like, say, you'd hear your friend say, "Oh yeah, we're going to a cinema," just for example. But I wouldn't be able to go to the cinema and see it because if we were right at the back of a cinema, I wouldn't have been able to see what my friends could see so easily, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be quite good if I could. If you could, like, nearly book, at the time, you couldn't book to go in there, like, say, second or the first row to see it. Another thing that had been helpful would have been, one thing I struggled when I went to sixth form and at South Moulton was I always had to ask help to find the right bus that I had to get on.
Yeah.
And also sometimes to get onto it, because obviously there's so many steps.
Yes.
It can sometimes be a little bit of a struggle. You might trip up the steps and then people might laugh, but actually they don't realise the seriousness of your eyesight.
Of course. So despite all these challenges, you know, getting to college, getting on a bus and all that sort of stuff, you decide that you're going to travel around the world.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. How did the bug start?
Well, I was working at the White Horse years ago and a friend... said to me that she's from New Zealand. She said, "If you ever want to come over, let me know, and you can come over." So then, one day I was working in a different place, and they said, "Oh, you can have February off if you want to."
Right.
So 6 weeks before I went, booked a ticket to New Zealand. And I'd only just got a passport. I'd never flown before, never travelled before. First, I got a passport and everything, and I went over with a change at Singapore. But what was a bit of a nervous point was because when London had the snow, so they changed my flight from 7 o'clock in the evening to 7 o'clock in the morning, which meant I had 12 hours in Singapore Airport. And then I got over there, and then my friend showed me all the way around the South Island. And I thought, and then I come back, and I just loved it, I absolutely loved it. And then me and my ex-girlfriend went on a cruise, and I come back, I thought, right, this is what I want to do. I loved it, and I've always loved travelling and finding out about different cultures, how different places live. And just,
so they say that travel broadens the mind.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to that first trip to New Zealand. I think the important thing to say is you went on your own.
Yeah.
So what did you think about that, Mum?
I was very worried. That he couldn't actually read the signs in Heathrow Airport.
Hmm.
And that she might not meet him and he'd be stranded in New Zealand.
Yeah.
She was a bit scatty, but yes, she was there. But it was worrying, yeah. But you had special assistance booked, didn't you, in Singapore, and they put you up in a room for the duration, so that wasn't quite so bad. But I've always said, take any opportunity you can in life.
Mm.
And you had the money because you hadn't paid for car and insurance and driving lessons, and you had the money saved up, and I said, go for it. You need to have the experience in different places.
So what did that do for your confidence?
That boosted, 'cause I was worried about, like, how do I get on a plane? What do I do? What happens if I miss the plane? And I was worried about quite a few things. And then obviously getting to Singapore and having a 12-hour thing, I was like worried, like, what's going to happen? What? And then after, the special assistance was brilliant. And as soon as people realise you got, as soon as like staff realise you got a bad eyesight or severely sight impaired, everybody was willing to help, especially in the airports, in like the hotel, but at the airport in Singapore, they're really willing to help you, and it just showed I could, like, your eyesight doesn't have to stop you. It doesn't have to stop you doing anything. If you plan it and you can have the confidence to just ask somebody, you can get the help and support you need.
So when it comes to planning one of these trips, do you use the same company all the time, or do you just decide, I'm going to go somewhere and take it from scratch? You know, what's the process you go through?
When my mum comes with me on most of the holidays I go on, we sort of look, just go through and look what sort of cruise you want to do or what holiday. Mm-hmm. And then I'll ring up and book it usually. And then I'll ask them for special assistance down.
Yeah.
And also another thing, because of my eyesight, I always ask them if I can have a seat. Like, me and mum can have seats together.
Yes.
And they will, a lot of the time, they will put you with seats together without charging extra for it.
Oh.
That's good.
And I always ask for special assistance. I always ask for an accessible room. So, like, going on a cruise, an accessible cabin, or in a hotel, an accessible room. So, not because you need it. Not because you need it for, say, some of the facilities, but it's walking in and not having to step in the shower room, for example, or having that little bit more room to walk around an end of a bed.
Mm.
It just gives you a lot more, makes life a lot easier otherwise. If you're tripping over or nearly tripping over going into the bathroom, you sort of think, oh, my eyesight's sort of wrecking the holiday. Well, you don't have that. If you ask for the accessible and the special assistance, it really helps and makes it go a lot smoother.
How do you find travelling with your mum?
Do you know what? It's really good. Because me and mum get on really well. And as I say, like, mum has always been there to help me with my diabetes and my eyesight and my health.
Mm.
And it, when we go away, it's more like a companionship, because mum, we have a good laugh, and people have said, always complimented us on any holiday we've been on. It's really nice to see how you and your mum get on so well. And sometimes, don't get it wrong, like any family, like me and mum have a fallout every now and then, but that's family, isn't it?
It is family. The thought of travelling anywhere with my mother fills me with dread. Okay, so you set yourself a challenge. What was the challenge that you set yourself?
I set myself a challenge of doing 30 countries before I was 30. And I managed that. I think I actually done 32. But my last, in January, I went to Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And that completed my 30 before 30.
I think that's amazing. Absolutely amazing. We were, when you came in today, you've given me a piece of paper which has all of the places that you've been. And what a great list. It looks like you started local, so you started with sort of France, and there's Germany and Spain, obviously New Zealand, but then Netherlands, Madeira. You started working your way out. It's really great to see. But you've got places there that I dream of. You know, Norway, Thailand, USA, Canada, Barbados. You were saying that actually the Caribbean is somewhere that you really loved going to. Tell us why. Why was that so good?
Because it's so hot, the beaches are so nice, but also all the sort of Caribbean people, they all are so good with my eyesight. They were also good there. Like, for example, we went on a boat trip, a Rum Runner it's called, and we thought, oh my God, how am I going to get off this boat to get on the beach? And the Caribbean staff that were on there, they just grabbed hold of me and they just held my arms and they were walking backwards and just holding me, keeping me so I didn't fall off or anything.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. It's just like, their thing is rush slowly and they help you and they just there to make sure everybody has a good time.
I really love that expression, rush slowly.
Mm.
And you're saying you saw that painted on the back of a church. Like, do you know what? I think that we just should adopt that as a nation. Yeah. Wouldn't that be brilliant if we just took a little more time to stop and chat to people?
Yeah.
So looking at this list of places you've been, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, language barrier. How do you deal with that?
You can sort of pick up a couple of words sort of here and there. You normally pick up a couple of words that you can hear some of the locals talking, and then you sort of pick it up. And also, you can go on like Google Translate, for example.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that is a good one, just to find out how to say. I found if you find out how to say, like, good morning, two coffees sort of thing.
Yeah.
If you're trying to speak their language, they'll be a lot more helpful to you rather than you just go in and say, can I have two coffees, please? They don't really sort of respect you so much.
So you're telling us basically that just speaking in English loudly doesn't help?
No.
Okay. So I think that most people respond well if you have a go.
Mm.
Yes.
And I love having been corrected by people when you've got it wrong as well. Mm. I've grown to enjoy that as I've got older. I suspect you like food.
Yeah.
Tell me about food around the world.
That I've tried many different meals, and so for example, when I went to Iceland, because in Iceland they're only allowed to have one breed of horse.
Right.
And then I went to a restaurant and tried a horse steak, and that was like, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I think I'd like to try. It's £30, if I don't like it, but at least I've tried it.
Yeah.
And I've been...
Did you like it?
Yeah, it's really nice it was, yeah. And I've been to, I've been to Gordon Ramsay's restaurant and tried his beef Wellington, and that was probably the best beef Wellington you'll ever have.
I love beef Wellington. But which restaurant was this? Where?
It was a Hell's Kitchen one in Las Vegas.
Wow.
At Caesar's Palace.
Yeah. Wow. What's the most disgusting thing you've eaten?
Probably the worst sort of thing I've eaten, probably I did try snails once.
Cretan snails, not French snails done with nicely garlic. With garlic.
Yeah.
No, Crete ones done in sort of, I don't know how they've done
garlic sauce.
Sort of white wine or something. But they were very still bendy. That coming out the shell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about exotic food?
I'm trying to think. Well, I've tried so many different things.
Bison?
Yeah.
Meatloaf?
Yeah, tried bison, meatloaf. And then I've tried, when we went to Alaska, we tried and went to Tracy's Crab Shack and had some king crab legs.
Oh, great.
And they were... just over a foot long each one.
Yeah.
And that was just, because that's like one of their local thing, we really looked, and that was really nice, and it's like, and like I say, like, I'm not worried about waste or buying it and not liking it, but I think this is how they eat in that country. Try it.
Yeah. As we said earlier, travel broadens the mind, doesn't
yeah.
it? And you
yeah.
And try something different.
And for example, when I was younger, I'd never used to eat courgette.
Right.
But then, I went on a cruise, and I started eating courgette.
Mm.
And it's like, it just broadens your mind and it gives you that thing like, just try it, you might like it.
You've got to be very careful what you say about food growing up with your mum sitting to your right.
Oh, mum knew I didn't like courgettes, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you always like to try different meats as well, don't you?
Yeah.
Wherever you go. We're sort of working our way through every animal, I think.
Mm.
I'm not his.
No, right. So, I asked you earlier, of all the places you've been, the sort of places that you've enjoyed the most, and the first place you said was Mexico.
Yeah.
Tell me about Mexico. What was it that made that so special?
When we went to Mexico, went to three different places in Mexico, but the best one was, I think, we went on this whale-watching trip, and it was just so chilled, it was so nice, and you don't get the feeling that you're chasing the whale around. They say when you're on there, if a whale comes up, you see a whale. If you don't, bad luck, basically.
Mm.
And it just, and they all just seem so happy there in Mexico. They just seem so happy, and we got a taxi, and they just seem really, really happy.
I'm interested to, I like to ask challenging questions.
Yeah.
So, the public might ask the question, you've only got 8%, 6 to 8% of your vision left. What's the point? What is the point of going halfway over across the world to somewhere where you can't see that much?
No, well, I thought this ages ago, and then I saw on TV, they said they were blind, but you can hear the sea.
Yeah.
You can feel the sand. And, you know, you can still hear, smell, feel, like, you feel the vibe. You can, if there's, like, a boat coming in, you can sort of hear the waves coming in.
Mm.
And you still got the smell, so you still sort of, and, like, mum's there, and she says, oh, there's a big building over there, and then describes it to me. So you can nearly imagine it in your head.
Mm.
And it just, like I say, it opens your mind to...
So do you make a point of visiting major landmarks, architectural things?
Not really. We haven't, but we sort of just try to go to places that seem really good. Like for example, we're going away to the Caribbean again in January.
Mm-hmm.
And then mum always researches like little YouTube videos.
Oh, right.
And then to see if how accessible or how it will suit me, sort of thing.
Good. Okay, so we talked about Mexico. You've been somewhere really amazing, Alaska.
Yes.
Tell me about Alaska.
That was brilliant, that was, because went on one of the deadliest catch ships.
Right. For those people who don't know what deadliest catch is, what is that?
That's where it's... Deadliest catch is where they go out into the Bering Sea and catch king crabs.
Mm.
And we got to go out. One of the boats had an accident with going into some rocks in series two of the program, I think it was. Mm. And they turned that into a tour boat to show people how they actually fish in the Bering Sea.
Yeah.
So they took us out and they showed us how they fish, catch the bait, and then bait up the crab pots, and they chuck a crab pot out. But what they do, they have a sort of like plastic crab on the ship, so they're not wasting any crabs. They're always just use the plastic crab to show people what they sort of catch.
Mm-hmm.
And all the captain of this boat came out, he introduced himself to me, he said, "Hi George, my name's Dave, and I will let you touch everything and see and feel everything before as much as anybody else can do."
Mm.
I think people are really kind at letting people have a go.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about jet skis.
Yeah.
You've driven a jet ski.
Yeah.
With somebody with you,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I had a sighted person behind me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like Octo's with a company that take six visually impaired people and six guides, and you get to experience it like a fully sighted person.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, like, the person just sat on the back of the jet ski and said, right, you best turn right, you best turn left, you can open it up here, you can, you know, and just said, like, what I could do, and it felt, you feel perfectly safe, and you've done it as well as anybody else would do.
Yeah. That's exciting. Talking about exciting, what's the most exciting thing you think you've done?
I think one of the most exciting things I've done is obviously, like I say, that going on that Deadliest Catch ship.
Mm.
Also going to the Gordon Ramsay restaurant. The whale watching was really, really good. That was quite exciting. Just, but I couldn't see the whales, but I could hear them landing, and it was just.
So you can hear the blowhole of the water,
yeah,
being,
yeah,
blown out of their, you know, breathing,
yeah,
splashing in the water.
You saw a whale in off Vancouver Island,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah.
And the whole ship knew that George had seen the whale because it literally came alongside the ship.
Wow.
And George went, I can see it! And there's everybody with their video cameras. So they have George's little comment, I can see the whale!
Fantastic.
Yeah, and, all right, I had about 15% sight then.
Yeah.
And it was just, I was just like, we ran up to the top deck, and then there's all these people videoing it, and I was just like, oh, I can see it. Like, I was like, just so amazed.
Do you find that you've locked those images in your head?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got some very dear friends of mine, and their son has a genetic disorder, which means that before he is 30, he's going to lose his sight completely. And they have set aside the time. They've retired early as a couple. And they're actually taking their son on trips, like you've been, to lock those memories,
yeah,
in his head. So you do that. You do recall,
yeah,
those things.
Well, it's like, I went, just for example, I went to Gran Canaria with my ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then a year later, me and Mum went to Gran Canaria on a cruise.
Yeah.
And I got off the cruise ship. And I said, right, go down there, turn left, turn right. And it's like I'd been there sort of,
yeah,
lots of times, and it's, and I just remembered it.
Now, I've never been on a cruise. So from what I know, you travel from port to port. Tell us a bit about excursions.
Excursions, a lot of them, the excursions, different companies do it differently, but the main overall thing is they have a thing on them saying easy, moderate, hard, high exercise. So you look at it, and so you've got a good idea of what it'll be easier for you to do, how hard it'll be. And then if you book the excursion, they'll take you off the ship to that excursion. And then you can do it. So like 1 year in the Caribbean, we've done the party bus, for example. And then you get to get off the boat, they come and meet you, they take you onto a bus, and they take you away, and it, yeah, it's just really good, and a lot of the time they'll help you on and off the bus, and if you book an easy one, they'll make sure that they see you proper, like make sure everything is it as you need it, shall I say.
Mm.
And like, if you say to the tour operator, you know, so if you say to the tour person on the ship, like, I've got this sort of eyesight, I can't do this, what can you recommend an excursion for me? They'll help you to find an excursion that is suited for you.
So it sounds to me like the loss of your sight is, you're not allowing it to obstruct your life.
No, no. My thing is, I sort of just, I got to this stage a couple of years ago, didn't I? And I sort of said, my eyesight isn't me. My eyesight is just one little part of me. It's only one little part of me. I can still speak to people. I still have people in the village that say hello to me.
Mm.
And you just have to find other ways around it.
Yeah.
And develop little ways of getting around it yourself that may seem silly to somebody else, shall we say, but to you it makes perfect sense. And you can, like, one of the things at home, for example, we've got a coffee machine, but I can do that because we put the coffee machine in a good place and I can make a cup of coffee with the coffee machine without looking.
Yeah.
Because we put the cups, everything, in the same place. We created it so it's easy, simple for me.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's safer than the kettle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what next for George Jones with his globe trotting?
On December the 26th, we're flying to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting on a cruise. And we're then going around, got two ports in Jamaica. Then we're going Panama Canal, Cuba for 2 days, Costa Rica, Colombia, Cayman Islands, and then in June we're going to Finland, Sweden, Lithuania, and Denmark.
That's amazing. Well done, you. Right, now I'm hoping that Jenny is listening on the call. Okay. And we're going to unmute everybody. Jenny? Hello?
Doing it now, Gray?
Doing it now, that's Tess. We're just going to unmute everybody. So while we're
there, you
doing
go.
That, thank you very much. George, this has been really inspirational. We're going to open it up now to see if anybody's got any questions. Has anybody got a question for George?
Well, I envy you, you know. It's Robert here.
Hello, Robert.
I know there. Hello. I have travelled, but not on my own. Because unfortunately, being disabled all my life, because I've had sight loss since the age of 2, so it hasn't been easy for me, having a family which I, you know, was always worried that I would get lost. But I do travel to Tynemouth every year,
mm-hmm.
So I do that on my own, and I've been traveling, you know. But the places I've traveled to, I've done Australia, Singapore and Australia in 2005, I've done New Zealand and Fiji. Wow. In 2007, I've done I've obviously done Spain, France, Germany. I've done Morocco for the day. I've done Florida in 2002. They're my really, really big holidays. I've been on a mini cruise, but with a friend of mine who I used to work with his lad, and it was to Spain. And you did Santander, Santillana, and Del Mar, and up in the Pecos. You did 4 hours in Portsmouth before you got on the boat. It's a shame. I'd love to do a great big cruise. I really would. I have been talking to my friend about it. He came with me to Tynemouth back in April. But I don't think my brother would, you know, they always worry. Families always worry, or certain families do.
I think that's a really good point.
Unfortunately, I've had that, you know.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Robert.
Mm.
What do you think about that as a mum, you know, letting go in some ways, I suppose?
Yeah, it is difficult. It is difficult
mm.
because there's so many things that could go wrong, but not saying that they will go wrong. But, you know, I think the main thing is just asking for help.
That's what I do.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't want to ask for help, and it's a big stage to sort of overcome that and realise that, yeah, it's not a bad thing to ask for help. What? And things will sort themselves out.
George, hang on a minute, Robert. George, you mentioned Travelize earlier.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about Travel Eyes.
Travel Eyes is a charity.
Company.
Oh, company, sorry. That they do different holidays, and they will take six severely sighted or blind people, however your eyesight is, they will take you.
Mm.
And they will also take six fully sighted people, and you will have a sighted guide one-on-one each day, and they do different trips. So, for example, I went to Thailand for 2 weeks with them, and there's six of us with eyesight needs, and they had six sighted guides, and they swapped the sighted guides around each day, so you had a bit of a shuffle with, you know, you got to meet different people. And like one of the things, and that's how they let me drive a jet ski, or not just me, sorry, all the blind people have gone a jet ski. Not the sighted guide was behind you, tell you go left, go right, go straight.
That's great. I've got another question.
Yes. Hello, James. My name is David. I live in Exmouth. I'm severely sight impaired. Lost most of my sight when I was working in Pakistan. I think you're a great ambassador, George, for people with vision impairment. I really take my hat off to you. You're great. You don't let anything get in your way. You're very similar to me, but I'm quite a bit older than you. But I've travelled to, since I lost most of my sight, I have been to Cyprus many times. I've just come back from there last week, actually. But you talking has given me some great thought about carrying on, because when I left Cyprus a couple of weeks ago, I thought, that's it, I'm not going anymore, I'm not doing any of this travelling anymore. But you've really, well, bucked me up in a way that I want to keep doing it. I know I'm old, a lot older than you, I'm 80 next year, but I've been there on my own, but I'm struggling now. Each year it creates a different set of issues. You know, it's like, as you probably know, it's like turning a dimmer switch down, your sight is getting worse and worse and worse as the years go on. But I think you're a great person, George, and keep it up, because you've really, listening to you talking, it's really given me a great incentive to want to carry on travelling. Fortunately, last in Cyprus, I went with my son as a treat. I thought, let's spend some money on my son and daughter. My daughter came out afterwards when we were there, halfway through our first week, rather. But I just pick up on this Travel Eyes. Sorry, I'm trying to call you Robert. George. I did look into these people years ago. The only downside I found was you do normally have to share a room with another total stranger, which sort of put me off a little bit, but I'll still think about it and consider it. But I go on my own. I know you've got your mother with you, which is a big help, and I think you probably would agree with this, George. Yeah. Being on your own against having a sighted person with you is much more difficult. It is a lot harder. On your own.
But just to go back, you know, you said about Travel Eyes, about sharing a room. They don't, for some reason, they ought to advertise it, but they don't. If you speak to them and say you don't want to share a room,
yeah, you can do that.
You can just pay like an extra £50, and they will get you a room by yourself.
Yeah, okay, George, yeah, thank you for that. I think they did mention that to me at one time, but to cut a long story short, because there's other people who probably want to talk to you, but just reiterating, you're a great ambassador for visually impaired people, and I hope people that are listening in, and people certainly that I know that are blind or severely sight impaired, I will put this story over to them. Don't let things get in your way. Work around them. If there's a problem, try and solve it.
Yeah.
And build some confidence up with yourself. I mean, I'm a guide dog, and I didn't ask you this, actually, George. I mean, I've been a guide dog owner now for nearly 9 years now. My dog's nearly coming up to 10 and a half in a week's time, and he'll be due for retirement. The question I was going to ask you, George, have you ever considered a guide dog?
I actually had one for a year and a half.
Right, yeah.
And then, you know, when the pandemic hit,
yeah.
The dog had a early midlife crisis.
Oh, dear.
And, yeah, and, like, crossing the road from the one side to the shop, the dog was sitting in the middle of the road. And I was you're supposed to be helping me, not killing me, sort of thing. And it turned out in the end that with some Golden Labradors, they have early midlife crisis, and that's in the end he got withdrawn.
Yeah.
So I've got a little Jack Russell at home, and I thought, well, I've got a bit of eyesight, I'm better off enjoying my old pet whilst I've got a time. And then.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I call mine Harry. The odd time I have used it, I call my cane Harry. But don't let that put you off, George. I had a dog for 6 months, and it just didn't work for me. I waited 2 years for Tarka. That's the name of my guide dog, and he is absolutely brilliant. Don't let that put you off. One little slip-up. They do a wonderful job. I do a great deal of charity work for guide dogs, as Graham knows. And don't let that put you off. Believe me, I'm not trying to put you off, but a guide dog will beat anyone with a long cane. And I'll put that challenge down to anybody. The dog will beat, and they're much more noticeable. People pay attention if you've got a guide dog. Long cane, they're a bit iffy about it, you know. Oh, what's wrong with him? You know, da-da-da. You've got a dog, and I've found this over the years. The public pick up a guide dog more than someone with a long cane. But anyway, best of luck, George, on the rest of your travels, and that's going to spur me on. Your talk is wonderful, and that's going to spur me on to do some more travelling for the rest of my life. Thank you very much for your
Thanks
talk.
For that, David.
Thank
that's
you.
Lovely.
Yeah, thank you.
So, are you going to train the Jack Russell? Could you not put the harness on the...
No.
Just the guard. You can put him under your arm on the... All right, there we go. Let's have another question, a sensible question.
This is Les. Can I ask something?
Go on, Leslie.
Thank you for your talk, George, and thanks to Mum for supporting you. What I wanted to know essentially was, I have a few questions, but I'm going to sum it up in one, is that I've recently done a biography of a young lady called Jenny Graham. And she circumnavigated the planet on a bicycle. She went for a world record. The point being, she was sighted, but she had a favourite piece of kit. And what she did was she set up a website called Jenny Graham Coffee, then a world record, where she could be followed by sponsors and people who wanted to follow her going around with the new technology. My question is, do you... whether it's in England or whether you're abroad, George, do you have a favourite piece of equipment, IT, that you would say helped you the most and was the most best for you and you feel, you know, that facilitates the requirements that you have, whether you're at home or away? And have you ever thought about putting something down on paper about your experiences?
It's an iPhone XR I got at the moment, and I use that a lot because, one, I can take pictures of things and then zoom into stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, with the triple tap, and also I find my phone very good that it will actually, I can ask my phone where I'm to, and it will tell me where I'm to in the world, and, like, what the time zone is, so I can keep an eye on.
I just need to explain for those people who aren't from Devon or Somerset, where I'm to means where I am. That's lovely. Oh dear, I remember the first time I came to Devon and where to. So where you are, and also you're saying that you use the Translate app on your phone.
Yes. I use the Translate app on my phone, and that just helps me to talk. So if I'm in Spain, just for example, I can order two coffees and I can just try to blend in with their language, and you get a lot. I find if you try to speak their language instead of your own language, you will get a lot more help because they can see you're trying to blend in with them.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know who takes the lead. Do you find that you are saying to Mum, I want to do this, I want to do that? Or who's the driving force? Is George a driving force? Is it shared?
Shared.
I think that's lovely.
Yeah.
So you are both getting something out of the trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we usually agree on the same things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be something I really want to go and see, which I know George will be pretty bored with, but then equally, he might want to do something I don't want to do. So, yeah, we're pretty good team together.
So building on Les's question, what would really help you? What could somebody invent that would help you with your travels?
I don't know really. Yeah. There's probably a way on a cane, and this is probably sound a bit bizarre, but on a cane, like making it so it's got like maybe a GPS in it.
Oh. This exists? Right, we need to put you onto the company, Smart Technology Limited.
All right.
Right, so there are various bits and bobs that could help. I don't know how successful some of these navigation things are in countries where there are not these beacons. So it depends on the technology, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But that's an interesting idea. Oh. It sounds to me like you're embracing technology.
Yeah, I try to. Because I haven't always been technically minded, but I find that as my eyesight deteriorating, I do have to rely on technology more. So one thing, big example of it is, because I'm diabetic, checking my sugar levels, I used to have to prick my finger to get the blood, but I usually use probably 10 or 11 strips, blood testing strips, for one check.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't see the blood on my finger correctly.
Yeah.
So now I've got a Dexcom sensor that I can just look on my phone.
So that's fantastic.
And it will tell me what my sugar levels are.
I've got a question for you. I was talking to Trish Sale the other day, and Trish was the lady with the visual impairment who did the TV programme Race Across the World.
Yeah.
Now, she's actually based in Devon.
Mm.
And we had a lovely talk, and she's at this very moment currently walking across the Great Wall of China, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here looking at you two, thinking perhaps you ought to put yourself forward for Race Across the World.
We do watch it, but
Would you do something like that?
Give it a go.
Right, it's nearly 5:30. We've got about another 5 minutes left to go. Les, did you have a second part to your question, or should we ask somebody
else? The only other part I had was, because of the unique experience that you've had, have you ever thought about putting something down and producing a book or something that just is a rough diary of where you went, sort of highlights that happened to you along the way?
I've thought about it, and I have had quite a lot about it, but at the minute it's just find how to start and where to start, because I've had so many experiences without being together. I've had so many experiences of doing stuff. Where do you start?
At the beginning.
But how do you start?
It's you have actually said that on several occasions, that you ought to write a book.
So that's your challenge. That's your challenge. You've got the physical challenge, but the mental challenge of trying to share it. And, I think a travel blog or just writing things down, it would be a good way of remembering too.
Graham, if you've got a couple of minutes, could I just come in very quickly, something I have thought about
while
listening to this. Well, what it is, I find this sighted assistant needs a lot to be desired. It really does.
Mm.
I found the sighted assistant coming back from Larnaca. I told my son to stand back out of the way. He knew I was there because he sighted, and let them do it. That was the best assistance I've had in a different country than England. Mm. You should get the help as you enter the airport terminal. You should get assistance right from that point. Now, what happened? You get there, and where is the assistance desk? Yeah, number one. How do you find where the assistance desk is if you're visually impaired? They should have a number to ring, or they should have a phone that you could probably ask someone that stands out as you enter the buildings. I think I'm going to really try and get onto this because I think this assistance needs an awful lot to be desired. It really does. Yeah.
So, David, as you know, we've been doing a lot of work with Department of Transport over the closure of ticket offices at railway stations in this country. And that whole argument, I've taken that up with the Secretary of State for Transport about that whole argument of a visually impaired person finding assistance on a railway platform. Because one of the questions that I was asked was, well, can't the guide dog find somebody? Well, the first hurdle there is to say, well, not everybody has guide dog, and guide dogs can't distinguish somebody on a platform.
I'll tell you what, Graham, if that dog knew the person, he would find that person. But he doesn't. He wouldn't know that person. He's just another person to a guide dog. And that is an absolutely ridiculous bloody question, if I may use that.
Well, that's what I said, but very politely, to the Secretary of State for Transport.
You cut the blood out then, did you?
Well, dear listeners, we've got 2 minutes to go, and I just wanted to thank George and Caroline, George's mum.
Thank you.
Just to say thank you so much for coming today. The big thing I want to take from this is rush slowly. I think rush slowly is such a lovely expression. Just to remind everybody of a few things that are coming up. Friday the 20th, that's 2 weeks' time, we've got our Sight Loss Conference. Tickets are going to be sent out in the next couple of days. So those of you who've booked your places, they'll be coming out shortly. Those of you who are voting members and can't make the conference but want to vote in our annual general meeting, you need to send back your proxy forms. And then that brings us to the Sight Loss Speaker event for November, which is on Tuesday, the 14th of November. Combating loneliness and isolation, helping to increase the independence, mobility and peace of mind of older and disabled people, combating the problems of loneliness and isolation. Our guest speakers are Faye Aston and Jackie Hammond, who are both from Mid Devon Mobility. So, there we have it. Another really successful call. I really enjoyed that. Thank you again, George and Caroline. And I'd like to thank all of you for joining us today. Thank you very much, and we'll speak soon. Bye-bye.
And thank you. Take care.
Take care.
Bye. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Bye.